Support for The Common comes from Davis Malm. Their tax attorneys take the time to understand your unique goals and find the most cost-effective ways to accomplish them, distilling complex tax laws down to clear choices so you can make the best decisions. DavisMalm.com. DavisMalm.com.
Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it. Because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. This month marks 1 year in office for Boston Mayor Michelle Wu. She is in the early part of year two of her historic term, and she's the first woman, the first Asian American, and the first person of color to be elected to the office at a time when the city is undergoing some serious changes while also rebounding from pandemic shutdowns. So, of course, the mayor is very busy, but she takes a little time every month to check in with WBUR's Radio Boston for the series Mondays with the Mayor. So we thought it'd be a good idea to reach out to Radio Boston host Tiziana Deering for a look back at Mayor Wu's historic first year in office and to get an idea of what to watch out for in year two. Tiziana, thank you so much for being here. It is really awesome to have you. I want to get right into it. I want to talk about Mayor Wu's first year, and I want to do that by looking through a few major issues in the city, starting with masks and CAS. The mayor says there has been some progress with less unhoused people being in the area. I believe it's by about a third less. Do you think this is a first step in a major shift for masks and CAS? Or is there a good chance it'll just go back to what it was before?
So it's a really interesting question, Daryl, because I think it is, and Mayor Wu and I talked about this recently, and in my words, not hers, I think she also argued that it's a bit of a both and. So if you think about inflows, right? So the mayor and the city will argue that they were successfully able to move well over 100 people into more stable housing, into options for longer-term support, that the tents that they worked with the city to remove in January of last year, the majority of the people who were in those tents have not come back because they've now received services. The city would make a series of claims like that. But what the mayor said to me last time we talked about this on Radio Boston, she talked about the fact that every time you help someone, there's someone else who has a need. And part of the tension around the area, around Malnia Cass Boulevard and Massachusetts Avenue, has been whether the people who are seeking support there and experiencing this intersection of addiction and homelessness and mental illness are from Boston. So if you start to succeed, which is, again, what the city argues they have done, the argument is it's almost a bit of if you build it, it will come.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like because things are working, more people are coming to the area, which might create problems or create new problems that need to be solved.
Yeah, and in fact, when the mayor was on Radio Boston talking about that, she called out the state. A few days before she was on her show, she said to the state, I need you to build a lot more beds at the state mm-hmm. level. We need more beds distributed outside of Boston if we're going to solve this problem. That then actually led to a pretty interesting back and forth. Mary Lou Sutters of Health and Human Services sent a sharp letter to WHO in response to all of that, saying, wait a minute, we've been a very good partner. Charlie Baker, the governor, expressed dismay. Mayor WHO doubled down on her argument that she needed more from the state. So this has been happening, this back and forth, around the issue of where services and support are coming from for people who are currently at the intersection in the area around Mass and Cass.
Okay. So I want to move on to some of the protests that she has had to deal with since she's taken office. You know, at the start of her term, she had these protests outside of her home that were just at all hours of the day, night, and she even had to pass a law for it, which kind of got it under control a little bit, but she's still getting these protesters, also getting some stuff online. Has she gotten used to that? How is she handling it, you know?
She's been pretty transparent from the beginning that she knew she was going to get pushback. The original protests were around pushback around vaccine mandates and other COVID measures.
Right.
And within that, there was a small group of people, some of whom were workers in city government who were sort of core to that. That then appears to have taken on a life of its own. And then you've just laid out the whole sort of saga of protesting around her home and the fact that those protests have continued. I recently asked her, is this racist? Is there a racial dimension? And we had had, mm-hmm. at some point, there was a letter written by a number of city and statewide officials saying there is misogyny and racism going on in the level of pushback and protest that Mayor Wu is getting. And Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins came on our show and said, yep, that's what I think mm-hmm. is happening. So it wasn't an outrageous question, right, to ask her that. And she said, yeah, I think that there is an element of, I am a woman. I am an Asian American woman. I'm pushing in new directions. I'm not backing down. And so the protest that she's experienced versus what you would have seen for a Marty Walsh, for example, is categorically different.
Mm, right. Even when you look so cool, it takes a lot to keep that composure. All right. Now we have to talk about, of course, the tea.
Do we?
The tea. You know, we have to.
Do we have to?
I feel like we'll get run out of town if we don't talk about Michelle Wu and the tea.
You are correct.
Governor-elect Maura Healey is going to have to appoint a new general manager who Wu is going to have to work with to get some of her transportation agenda done. Where are things with that?
It's a great question. So a couple of things there. One, Michelle Wu was out early about a free tea. In fact, before she declared, she was pushing for a free tea. So she had the early stake in the ground. When Kim Janey becomes acting mayor of Boston, she then launches a pilot on a couple of bus lines to be free. Since Michelle Wu has been mayor, she has taken three bus lines, extended that pilot, and made them free for multiple years. So there's a start there. In the meantime, she has also taken the opportunities both from COVID, when there were things like, on-street restaurant dining and that kind of thing, and the changes in bus lanes, bike lanes, et cetera, that were necessitated by the Orange Line shutdown
mm-hmm.
that the T did.
That was a big move, too.
It was. In late summer and early fall, she's keeping some of that in place. So once again, using it as a stalking horse to get some changes. So all of that is there. I will tell you, just a couple of days or less than a week before the Orange Line shutdown was announced, she said to us on air, it's time for the T to take drastic measures. And less than a week later, we have the Orange Line shutdown.
I want to talk about the Boston Police Department. Mayor Wu appointed a new commissioner, Michael Cox, who's a Roxbury native. But she's also been very critical of the BPD contract. So I'm wondering, what is her relationship with the department? Specifically, what's it been like in her first year?
Well, you know, I think part of it comes down to what has the BPD's relationship been with the mayor's office in the last couple of years? Because first, you know, Mayor Marty Walsh, before he became U.S. Labor Secretary, starts a police reform process, has a task force on police reform, announces that he's going to embrace all of their recommendations. So this process begins. Then he becomes Labor Secretary. Acting Mayor Kim Janey moves from Boston City Council to the mayor. And she's the one that starts the process by firing Commissioner Dennis White, who Marty Walsh had appointed very abruptly. So now you've got the interim, you've got the reforms already being pushed, you've got distrust, because as the Dennis White story comes out, there's a lot of pushback on police about transparency and protecting their own. By the time Michelle Wu becomes mayor, you've got a year and a half to 2 years of really heavy tension. And now you have Michelle Wu come in and say, I'm going to keep going with those reforms. And by the way, they're all in the middle of negotiating a contract right now. As we're talking, there is a throwdown going on between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Wu around the status of the contract. On the flip side, as a Boston City Councilor, Mayor Wu pushed back on budgets for the police, wanted to see police budgets cut. As mayor, she has not carried that same thing forward. So it's an interesting mixed bag there. I think her biggest move so far has, in fact, been the hiring of Michael Cox, a Black man and a native of the community who had been in the Boston Police Department for the vast majority of his career.
All right. I want to talk about climate. Making sure that Boston is a more sustainable and climate-resilient city was a major topic for Mayor Wu while she was on the campaign trail. Has she made good on her promises?
I think to some extent that depends on who you ask, Daryl, in that this area is one where her most ardent supporters and where people, climate activists, want a lot from the mayor. And those who want a lot from her have expressed frustration that she didn't get enough done in the first year. That being said, she put several hash marks in place, and she has been transparent that part of her challenge in her first year was getting the team that she wanted in place. And it wasn't until August of 2022, the director of the Green New Deal for Boston, that she even hired and put that person in place. So there's been some lag there. That being said, she's taken some steps in other areas, dealing with heat zones and heat resilience. She's hiring arborists to take care of the city's treescape. She started to take steps. I'm not sure anybody who feels strongly about Boston's Green New Deal, including the mayor herself, would give her an A for year one. But I think people who are watching on the climate front would say that she is certainly signaling that the Green New Deal for Boston continues to be a top priority for the mayor.
So, with all that said, how would you sum up Mayor Wu's first year in office?
That's interesting. You know, I usually stay out of that business, right?
Yeah, I don't want you to get in trouble. No.
Well, I do. I usually stay out of that business because, you know, my job is to be an honest broker. That being said, Soraya Wintersmith of GBH just put out a story talking with Wu and about Wu in her first year, basically characterizing it as some big moves in some big places, frustration among her biggest advocates that she hasn't moved fast enough, and certainly one of the things the mayor and I have talked about on air that I think really does characterize her first year is her push to try to hire a cabinet and a group of leaders and sometimes being really slowed down by the inability to get that leadership team in place in this hiring environment, in this economy, et cetera. So I think it's of a bit of a push me, pull you, right? The question really is year two.
That's like a halfway point.
Yeah, really. And okay, so in places where there's promise coming out of year one, if you're one that supports the mayor's policies and agenda, the question is, what's the execution in year two?
Understood. Tiziana, this has been great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed being on.
We'll be back with more after a quick break.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So Tiziana, it's the week of Thanksgiving. Are you hyped? Are you excited? How you feeling?
Yeah, I host and I cook, and it brings out the inner, I don't know what you want to call it, cook, caregiver, mama in me. Yeah. And so I love this week. I got some turkey to cook and some stuffing to make and pies to bake, and I love it.
All right. Now, I want to know, be honest here, what is a must for your Thanksgiving table and what is a bust for your Thanksgiving table?
So must, there are several, but I'll feature my Nonna's pork sausage stuffing, which I learned the recipe for. Yeah, exactly. The bust is, I have never been a cranberry sauce fan, but last week on our show, Boston celebrity chef Tiffany Faison came in with a Thanksgiving pizza she made that had cranberry sauce on it, and it was redonk. So I am rethinking my apathy towards cranberry sauce after that.
This might be someone's bust or whatever, but I like cranberry sauce out the can.
I can guarantee
I prefer the ocean
that
spray.
What Tiffany Faison brought in was not out the can.
Give me that manufactured cranberry log.
It is all yours.
That's Radio Boston host Tiziana Deering. And that's our show for today. I'm Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow.